Good afternoon. Does toothbrushing make a difference at school? This was a question our team asked when dental disease was identified as a top health concern through a county assessment and echoed through surveying a group of school nurses in our local school district. To answer this question, the team asked a few more questions. First, is poor oral health a problem? In higher social economic groups, oral health is the norm, but this is not the case in many lower social economic and minority groups. In many of these groups, dental disease is the norm, and here are a few statistics to put this in context. According to the World Health Organization, worldwide, 60 to 90% of school-aged children have dental disease. In a 2012 Pew report, 830,000 emergency room visits related to dental disease were reported in the United States in 2009, costing taxpayers millions of dollars. And according to the Illinois Department of Public Health, 30% of school-aged children have a history of dental cavities, 20% have untreated cavities, and 2% have urgent dental needs. And in the 2012 community assessment in our area, it revealed that 43% of our third graders had cavity experience, 21 had untreated cavities, 21%, and 33% of our three-year-olds enrolled in our WIC programs have signs and symptoms of early childhood caries. I really like this graph because it gives you a really good visual. But the National Center for Health Statistics in 1996, which I know is old, reported that tooth decay is 5 times more common than asthma in school-aged children in the U.S., making it the most common disease among this age group. The statistics of dental disease, or the statistics for dental disease, show that it's a global problem with a local impact. And with these overwhelming statistics, our team was compelled to ask more questions, such as, what is the impact of poor oral health? A 2011 CDC reports dental disease is common and causes debilitating pain in millions of Americans each year. A 2011 Institute of Medicine report finds untreated dental disease leads to pain, infection, and tooth loss, and also contributes to an increased risk for serious medical conditions such as respiratory disease, heart disease, diabetes, and poor birth outcomes. Dental disease is an infectious, transmittable disease caused by a variety of acid-producing bacteria that are fueled by sugars that are in our foods and drinks. Over time, the bacteria break down tooth enamel, resulting in dental disease. But evidence also suggests that daily toothbrushing with fluoride toothpaste could generate a 15 to 30% reduction in the disease process. The third question we asked was, what is the impact of poor oral health on children? So in addition to the previous slide, poor oral health can limit activities in schools and at home, and often significantly diminishes quality of life. Dental problems affect growth and cognitive development in children by interfering with sleep, causing chewing problems, limiting food choices, and results in poor academic performance and low self-esteem. In younger children, poor oral health is associated with failure to thrive and impaired speech development. Annually, an estimated 51 million school hours are missed due to dental-related illnesses. So the evidence does suggest that oral health is a problem. So what are the options for improving oral health? Well, first would be to increase access, which has been a topic of discussion since the 2000 Surgeon General's report describing dental disease as a silent epidemic. And we are making some progress, but it's still not enough. Dental disease was brought to the forefront again in 2007 when Diamante Driver, a 12-year-old Maryland boy, died of complications of an abscessed tooth, but we continue to have 17 million low-income children who receive no dental care in the United States. So the America's Promise School Project team began to look at ways to increase awareness. The team initially donated toothbrushes and toothpaste to children with identified needs. We also opened communication with parents through educational activities at school, like the school health fairs, giving parent information at parent-teacher conferences and sending home informational flyers to parents, but it still didn't seem to be enough. Next, we proposed the implementation of a standardized education curriculum and made it as easy as possible for the school districts to implement this education. Copies of the American Dental Association's Smile Smart Oral Health curriculum were distributed to each school building in the district, along with information regarding the importance of oral health and the evidence of dental disease in children both locally and nationally. And the evidence, and even more importantly, the impact of dental disease on the school performance and attendance, hopefully provided enough traction that we hope to be able to get in the doors to discuss more options. As the team continued to explore ideas, the toothbrushing intervention was developed, and we began to look for innovative partners willing to consider daily toothbrushing at school. In early 2013, we approached one of the school nurses our team felt we had a strong collaborative working relationship with, and used her influence and guidance to broach the idea with the first grade teachers in two schools. We contacted them via email and scheduled a face-to-face meeting to discuss possibilities, concerns, and what it would take to start toothbrushing at school. We were prepared to answer the question, why toothbrushing at school? And we arrived at the school armed with facts, statistics, ideas, and lunch. With this in mind, our team began with three goals. Number one, to build a habit, making toothbrushing a part of their daily routine. Number two, to practice what we teach by offering active participation and immediate feedback to reinforce the oral health curriculum along with the toothbrushing activity. And number three, the oral health intervention project would yield evaluation data. We were successful in persuading the first grade teachers to try our intervention for a 10-week pilot. And this is our data evaluation plan. We have three comparison groups. Group one receives the standardized oral health education along with the toothbrushing intervention. Group two, only the standardized education. And group three is our control group, which receives whatever the traditional education in that school would be. The 10-week pilot was completed in the spring of 2013, and we are in the data collection phase currently, while continuing to implement the intervention for a new group of first graders for the 2013-14 school year. The first grade was chosen for the oral health intervention due to the timely comparison of the students' kindergarten and second grade dental exams, which does not result in duplication of effort because the dental exams are required by the Illinois Board of Education. De-identified aggregate data will be used to compare the students' kindergarten and second grade dental exams, and the information collected from the report includes caries experience versus no caries experience, urgent dental needs, treated versus untreated caries, and the number of students with completed exams versus the number of students with no exams on file. The schools for groups two and three are matched to group one using the school report card data, including diversity, free and reduced lunch, and the mobility rates. Here's some of the lessons we've learned so far. Communication and cooperation are vital to achieve the goals of our project. Communication with all key stakeholders, including parents as well as teachers and administrators, is crucial. It would not be possible without the cooperation of the school districts and especially the administration. And creativity and perseverance are also essential for the success of the project. And a sense of humor, being flexible, and being connected to the internet are important as well. Here's an example. Who would have imagined that permanent marker does not adhere to slick plastic toothbrushes? But applying clear nail polish or scotch tape solves the problem. We've also utilized resources from other programs such as the Child Smile Program in Scotland, the Head Start Oral Health Best Practices, and the Massachusetts Growing Healthy Smiles in the Child Care Setting Program to design our policy and procedure guides. We were able to modify existing policy and procedures to fit our project, which was a valuable time saver during the initial implementation phase. Our next steps include continuing the toothbrush intervention in one of the schools which participated in the pilot. They began toothbrushing in September of 2013, and we have three more schools interested in starting in January of 2014. We are in the preliminary stages for collecting data from the spring 2013 pilot, and we continue to refine our implementation project as each school has a slightly different classroom setup, making each one a unique challenge and adding valuable information for process improvement. We are also considering a longitudinal study. The oral health intervention would begin with toothbrushing in kindergarten and continue through fifth grade. And the data comparing, we would have data then to compare kindergarten, second grade, and sixth grade dental exams for that particular cohort. And this type of study would potentially strengthen the evidence to support toothbrushing at school as an option for health promotion and disease prevention in school-aged children. And list of resources, and I thought you might like to see some pictures. So typical first grade classroom. And you can tell the kids really hate toothbrushing at school. They actually have quite a bit of fun doing this. They really enjoy the activity. And this is part of our storage system. These are trays. It holds six different compartments, and so each child has their own compartment. And the students somehow or another come along and pick up their own toothbrush and toothpaste, take it back to their desk. It's kind of an organized chaos. Each student is provided with their own toothbrush and toothpaste, and we try to keep them labeled with their names. And as you can see, the compartments are numbered because each student has an associated number, so that makes it easier to use year to year. Each classroom has a slightly different setup process. Here the trays are set up by the sink. In the previous slide, you saw the trays set up on a table. So that's where the flexibility comes in. Each teacher has whatever works out in her classroom. Each student gets their toothbrush and toothpaste from the compartment of the tray and returns to their desk. The paper towels are provided through the project funds. The students brush while sitting at their desks. And just another example of how things end up. Some of the teachers do this while the kids are at recess, and when they come back, everything's on their desk. This is the actual storage system when it's all put together before and after the toothbrushing activity. The trays are designed for air drying the toothbrushes. They have little holes in the top of the lids. I don't know how well you can see that, but that's what they're there for. And the teachers this year have done a few things differently. They assign jobs each week, so some of the kids pour water, some pass out the paper towels, some put the trays out. So, and the kids really like being assigned their particular task. And this is just another way that the cups are set up. These children come into the classroom from recess, pick up a cup on their way, and go to their desk. And here they're actually carrying water in their cups, which I'm sure has resulted in a few spills. And then the students are taught early on how to put just a pea-sized amount of toothpaste on their toothbrush. And I'm sure this takes probably the most time in the beginning, but it does work out. And we really like it that the teachers, most of them do participate, so it provides an excellent role model experience for the children as well. And here's the next teacher. She also brushes every day with her kids. And in this one, that picture is of the screen, actually, and each classroom uses a two-minute video for their toothbrushing activity, and there's singing and dancing and all kinds of things that happen. There are several available on YouTube, but it helps them, you know, get what two minutes can be an eternity for a first grader. And then these are our participation sticker sheets. So each day the student is able to add a sticker to the weekly participation sheet. This is an incentive to make good choices and a record for our project. And the whole process in the beginning takes about 15 minutes from start to finish, but by the end the kids have it down to about 5 minutes, so it only takes a few weeks for them to really be able to get it all together. And I do have examples of some of the parent flyers and our policy and procedure that I brought with me if anyone's interested in looking at that information. And any questions?
All right. So now we do have time for questions, if you have any for us.
I actually am interested in the last part of your program. I recently graduated from my pediatric dentistry residency, and this is great what you guys are doing, because obviously a lot of schools don't do that, and
right.
a lot of the kids need a lot of dental care. And I was wondering, what have you done when it comes to screenings and when it comes to referrals to pediatric dentists around the area?
Yeah.
Have you worked with any, or?
Yeah, if I can tell you, we aren't doing screening. Our data we're using are the aggregate data. Illinois requires dental exams, so we're mm-hmm. using the kindergarten, and then we'll use the second grade data for our comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in a county, the public health department in our county has, the problem is so bad, you know, that they got funding and built pediatric dental clinics. So I don't know if you want to say more about what happened.
I think we spoke yesterday. We have a lot of dentists in our community. We have very few that will accept public aid. So that leaves us in somewhat of a lurch. But because the dental exams are required in kindergarten and second grade, somehow or another those generally get done. We have a very small percentage of children whose parents opt not to do that. And there is a way to do that. There's a form that they can fill out. But are you gonna say something? Oh, yeah, we do have, what is that called?
Delta
Dental does come around and do some of the oral health exams for the students.
And they also do, there's a Sealant program
mm-hmm.
in the community as well.
Do you have a fluoride varnish program available?
I don't think so. Our health department.
In the process of being a point of discussion,
mm-hmm.
on the oral task force for the health.
And our health department in that community does have a pediatric dentist that works 4 days a week. So we don't generally have a problem getting kids with urgent needs in, because they do hold appointments for that. And I think they do a fair amount of prophylactic work as well. But she is very busy.
My other question is, are your students getting any oral health education during classes, or are they not? Or is this just part of the program?
Our undergraduate students actually do part of the oral health curriculum as far as teaching the oral health curriculum that we have already out for the schools to use. But I do think it's important in one of my, as a faculty member someday, I would love to integrate more education in our undergrad and graduate programs on oral health, and I'm familiar with the Smiles for Life program.
Only what we give them, okay. You know, as far as we know. And we do, as we're introducing it to the schools, they get the standard curriculum and all the guidelines. I'll tell you, we went out to the schools at first thinking, who knows if the first grade teachers will join us
right.
in piloting, because I think when you first think about brushing teeth, many teachers are like, really? What else do you want us to do? Because they don't have a lot of time. But the data are pretty compelling, and I think that's what got these first grade teachers on board. And we're finding, as we're adding additional schools, once the first grade teachers hear about it, they want to see the pictures, they want to know how it works, and we tell them we'll tailor it if we can get the one time a day. But the data are so compelling, and they care about kids. So they're willing to give it a go and get it going. I'm guessing that we're going to end up in this country someday having requirements like we're starting to see in Massachusetts. You know, we'll see that grow in terms of, you know, building that daily habit. Yes.
I just
follow.
How do you deal with the spitting and the rinsing part of the end?
The cups that have just a little bit of water in them, not very much at all, like just barely covering the bottom. They can use it, actually sometimes they dip their toothbrushes in them to get them wet, but it's actually not a bad thing to brush with a dry toothbrush. So you actually get a little more of an abrasive effect. But then after they're done with all of this, and you know, it's amazing, and I've watched these kids, some of them foam at the mouth like you wouldn't believe, and others barely make any foam, and I don't know what the difference to that is. That's a whole other research project all on its own. But they have the paper towels, they can use as many as they need. I'm sure some kids need more than one. So they can kind of catch some of the spit that way, or if they foam a lot. But then when they're done, they rinse with the water and then spit everything back in the cup. And then usually the teachers have them shove their paper towel in on top of that to absorb the extra water so they have fewer spills. So, yes?
And they're sitting because when they were standing, which we did at first, too many toothbrushes were getting dropped from the floor.
There is an argument about you should rinse after you brush.
Yeah.
That is true.
Right.
Yeah. And we've mentioned that to them, but you know, it's a lot to do with what you see at home or what your practices are. So we haven't really fought that one too hard. You know, we just wanted them willing to do it. And the interesting thing that we found in the pilot in the spring, there were several students identified who didn't know how to hold a toothbrush, didn't know how to do the proper brushing techniques. Actually, a few were referred to occupational therapy because they simply could not do it. So if they weren't able to do it at school, they probably weren't doing it at home either. So, you know, at least once a day, hopefully, you know, maybe up to five times a week, they were getting at least some exposure to toothbrushing and fluoride.